You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers, as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News. And join me on the other line, a man who is not starting training camp today, Adam Friedman. Adam, how's it going?
Going pretty well. I guess I've talked to you. It's been less than 24 hours I talked to you last time. So we keep talking too much, Tony. I feel like
we are.
Every day I talk to you. More than my girlfriend sometimes, it feels like.
Since free agency, we've talked very often. That will, fortunately, just kidding. By the end of this week, we'll finally be able to a normal schedule. Feels like today is the first day of training camp. If you're hearing this either soon or recently, Victor Oladipo, Domantas Sabonis, and Nate Bjorkren spoke to the media. We'll cover all the comments from players and Bjorkren later this week on a podcast. But today, we are starting a mailbag, and we got so many questions. It's insane. So it's going to be a lot more rapid-fiery than usual. We're going to spread it out over two episodes like we have in the past, but it's going to be super fun and super awesome. And you all know what a mailbag is, and because there's so many questions, we're just jumping right in. So the first one comes from Jack, at Jack with a Q, Chris. He says, with camp roster spots. This relates to the end of camp roster spots. And this is before they announced the signings. He said the last player in camp probably doesn't have a high chance to make any kind of impact on the team. What are the pros and cons of bringing Lance back to compete for a roster spot? Cons: he's not a very good person and he's not a very good player. Pros: I'll let you take that.
So the pro of having him is that he is probably good enough to play if there's injuries or whatnot in the top 10. Current situation, the con is right now he's not. I mean, he's not better than any of the, what's that, 11 guys, assuming Lamb is healthy.
13, honestly.
Yeah, he's probably better than that. Maybe not sooner. Maybe 12 guys. But my guess is he's not a training camp guy. Lance is not that way. What you do, Lance is your break-the-glass guy when if you get to – now it'll be April, May, and there's a bunch of injuries, whatever. You bring him in if you need a guard or some kind of maybe even small forward is on the bench, but he's not somebody you bring in for 72 games this year, to somebody you bring in for 20.
I agree with that. Or you bring him in for six games because you're not going to make the playoffs and you need to put some butts in seats.
No, they made the playoffs that year, Tony.
They did, because he actually was on the team. All right. I hate talking about Lance so much.
It's fine. We got a ton of just moving.
We do. Number two, I got to just fly through these. It's from Well-Seasoned Stuffing from Hell, who's at the Hasselhoff. He says, it feels like there are a surplus of guards/small wings on this roster compared to normal. I agree. Do you think this is indicative of Bjorkren's preferences, like going small or more three-guard lineups? Interesting question, because a lot of the roster is the same as last year, but
a lot of it, the entire roster is the same as last year.
Basically, the entire roster is the same as last year. And McMillan did not really have a preference for these guys. Although the guys they signed in free agency with the two spots to replace Alize and Leaf are both guards, LeCue and Keelan Martin, although Keelan can be a wing. If you look at the Raptors, who kind of play Norman Powell at the three with Van Vliet and Lowry at the guards, you could say maybe that Bjorkren's preferences are for lineups that include, you know, two point guards or maybe more ball handling on the perimeter than the Pacers currently had in the past. But I would just say I don't think this roster necessarily is indicative of that. It's kind of just how the team is.
So this is a Kevin Pritchard thing, right? If you go back, let's see, free agency signed Jeff Teague, Thaddeus Young, Darren Collison. No, the Teague
was pre Pritchard.
No, Teague. I thought that no. First year Pritchard. No, you're right. That was
2017.
Right. That was a pre, but he was still the GM of the team, so he was still on that. But, like, Pritchard has a tendency to go from Collison to Bojan to Tyreek, Justin Holiday, I mean, and to Brogdon. He seems to like sort of these sort of, I would call, hybridish players, right? Like, you know, Thad could play a little 3 and 4. Brogdon can play 1 through 3. Even, you know, then you have Bojan who can play 2 and 3. He seems to have a preference for, I don't know, sort of three-point shooting clearly and sort of – more players that can fit kind of in that 1 through 4 model in any of the spots, that makes sense. So to me, it's more a Pritchard thing than a Bjorkren thing, just because the team's just saying.
Yeah, it's hard to say. The Keelan Martin signing is the only, like, true signing of a guy who could be on the roster that wasn't last year since Bjorkren was hired. He can play guard and wing, so maybe he just likes multi-versatile guys that he can get for cheap. But it's really hard to say. This free agency period doesn't really reflect what I think his roster preferences are.
And the league is smaller, right? This is just how it's going to be when you go to free agents, right? There's just going to be more of these kind of guys who can play 2 through 4, 1 through 3 type of players.
Brad Montgomery at BradMon06662580. Not a bot, though. Nice guy. He says, love the show, guys. Had a question for the mailbag. What are your expectations for Domas next season? It seems every year he's improved quite significantly and is, in my opinion, the most critical player going forward. Do you think Bjorkgren can use him differently to how McMillan had? Keep up the great work. Thanks. Okay. That's a lot of words, but basically, Domas. Yeah, he's gotten a lot better every year of his career. Very interesting growth arc where, you know, some guys level off, some guys have a huge jump and then kind of plateau. He's just kind of steadily gotten a pretty decent chunk better every year of his career. So it's hard for me not to think he'll get better again, and he'll have continuity to help him kind of understand the familiarity of his teammates already so he can easily improve other skills. I mean, it's easy to say that if he adds a three, he's just like a top five center in the NBA. I don't know if he will or not, but, you know, that's the, kind of the next evolution for me is he can shoot a little bit, so he's got a little more space to operate with all the time.
Yeah, I mean, Domas has ways to improve on the marginal ends of some of his stuff, right? He'd always be a little better rebounder, a little better passer, probably a lot better passer, I guess, in some ways, a little bit better shooter here and there. But for him, it's the one part of his game that he really needs to just even start developing in a way that we haven't seen is three-point shooting, whether it's just taking threes and not maybe shooting that great, but just, yeah, becoming – who shoots one or two threes a game, just because that's kind of like the Marc Gasol thing. Right? Gasol's career never took threes, and all of a sudden he started doing it. Wasn't great his first year, but over time he was good enough where then he became legitimately kind of a stretch 5% of his career, and that's what Sabonis needs to do a little bit of. But to me, I mean, he's going to – I think no matter who the coach was, unless it was somebody who wasn't going to play him, he's going to keep getting better because he just has gotten better every year, and he's going to be in a better situation, right? If he's going to play, they play more small ball around him, especially with the four starters, and they throw in, you know, Justin Holliday or Devin Dermott around him. He's just going to play better because he's going to have the whole space to operate with, and he seems to each year come in with like a little better chemistry and a little more understanding and a little more confidence in his passing. I mean, that's the one thing that sort of separates, I think, ultimately Turner and Sabonis is Sabonis. You put the ball in his hands and he feels like he's comfortable and is not shying away from making a tough pass. And he might turn over, for sure, but he's not really afraid of it. And this that versus like Turner sometimes is a little too hesitant on those kind of moves, and that's what kind of holds him back.
Yeah, and I think the other thing with Domas, and we kind of saw him try this last year, is get a little more nimble to defend more if he's going to be more perimeter-oriented. Now, if Turner's gone, he needs to honestly just be bulky and defend the basket like crazy. But you know, he came in skinnier last year. I remember Oladipo calling out how skinny he was at media day, and I think that was because he kind of thought he'd have to defend more on the perimeter and move more, and he can always get better on D. His D's still probably kind of average. He's still good at muscle on muscle defense with the other bigs, but basically every other situation and, you know, drop coverage, all the things that the Pacers loved to do, he wasn't as good at. So any step forward in those categories would be good.
Yeah, I mean, obviously on the defensive end, that's where he needs to make a large stride and sort of a big leap in a sense, because if he's going to be the dominant center, right? I mean, that's the one thing that has probably prevented him from really out-taking Turner, right? If he had even, let's say, 80% of Turner's defense, he would by far be the starting center by himself, but he doesn't quite have the ability to protect the rim the way Turner does, and he obviously is not as good in the perimeter as Turner got the last couple of years. So, I mean, that's obviously one point. If he jumps defensively with the same offense, then all of a sudden it's like you got to get rid of Turner and just let him be by himself.
Yeah, I agree with that. We'll see how the development goes with Bjorkgren. And if he plays totally different, who knows? Who knows? Next question. Luke DeNuke at Luke_Duh_Nuke_NB. I probably don't need to read the ads, but just in case. People like hearing their name. What are your thoughts on the reports that Victor Oladipo and Nate Bjorkgren have forged a strong relationship? Sounds great. I feel like we've heard a lot. Kind of like he threw the vine isn't the perfect word, but just kind of pairing up what we know, what we've heard, what various reports say, what players have said, that maybe the relationship between some guys and McMillan last year at the end was not super great. And that's always a factor in players' malcontent, including potentially one, Victor Oladipo, who has apparently said he at one point maybe wanted to be on another team. That apparently is not the case now because him and Bjorkgren are tight and have this strong relationship. And they texted right when he hired, and they've had multiple calls. And we'll hear from Vic today/tomorrow. About, you know, more about that relationship, but my opinion on it is that I think Oladipo's kind of just excited to have a new coach.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I was Oladipo, frankly, yeah. not that his style didn't work with McMillan, but it not many players would work with him. I guess that's like they were just playing such kind of an older school where, like, I think Vic in his ideal world would love to take, like, I don't know, 8 threes a game, right? I don't know. It's good, great. You know, I would, you'd probably take
now,
five.
Yeah, now.
Right, like now. right? But even before, and it, you know, you could say some of the reason he maybe got hurt is because McMillan pushed him in a way maybe he should have pulled off, right? Like, I think we would joke in the during Vic's great season that, like, their go-to bailout play was a pick and roll with Vic, and you just pick and roll at the roll of the rim and take the contact and score, right? And maybe that was what's going to happen anyways, but there is something to be said for, like, you kind of only bring out, you know, your best play every so often, not rely on it every second of every day, because then it's not, then it becomes kind of too easy to beat in some ways. And I think with Vic, it's just kind of restarting that relationship in a way, because I don't know if it's McMillan or the training staff or the GM, but he clearly was not happy with, like, his rehabbing and how much he had to play and like that. And I don't know if that's coaching or something else, but I think there's a chance for sort of a reset here, where if a new coach can, you know, develop a really good system, he can succeed, and he might be willing to stay because he could see it as sort of a new start for him in some way.
Yeah, it basically can't have cons and it can only have pros.
Well, it could have a con if it just is like a terrible relationship, but I get what you mean.
Yeah, right now the strong relationship has minimal cons, unless he like leans too heavily on a not good player, but that has, again, yet to be determined. Last question for this segment before we do a break, because this one is super short and it'll take 2 seconds. Sam Dabbs at @LChivo_5. He says, I'm sick of asking this question. We'll continue to ask until it happens. When will Tony be verified? That's a great question, Sam. I appreciate that. Adam, you're verified. How do I get to your status?
You know, I work for a company that happens to have some connection somewhere, frankly.
I need those.
You know, I assume you can somehow apply for it, but I don't really honestly know. I mean, I was just told to send my Twitter handle into somebody, and they got everybody at my employer verified, only because I'm a journalist, I guess.
Somewhere. Send me that email. Send me the deuce.
No, like I said it to like some guy who's our who is like our digital guy, and then he sent it to somebody else.
I'm going to get scammed. I'm going to pay some website to do it for me.
I don't know how you get verified if you don't. I mean, there's got to be some process, right? Or is it just like, it's just arbitrary?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah.
No one's impersonating me, so it doesn't matter. But it would be cool.
Yeah, you would think if you got enough followers at some point, you'd be verified just because, like, you know what I mean? Because you're like, what, at 5,000, 6,000 followers now?
Yeah, 6,000 something.
6,000? Okay. You when we first met, Tony, you were, I think, not even, were you at 1,000 yet?
No.
Nice. So, you know,
remember
help to get there. No, I'm kidding. I've done nothing.
Yeah. Thank you, Adam.
All right. I knew you before you were
big. We have like upwards of 25 more questions between the rest of this show and tomorrow's show to get to. So we're going to do that. But first, we're going to take a break and talk about the great people over at Built Go, because they're making one of the best workout protein gels that you can have. And they're going to help you break through your wall, whether it's a mental wall or a physical wall. You can break through it with Built Go every day. They come in easy to take 1.5 ounce packages that'll fit in your briefcase, your laptop bag, your golf bag, even your pocket. And it's the best workout gel on the market, and you can carry it around anywhere. 5-hour energy without the crash feeling, Monster without the caffeine. They have 3 delicious flavors. I really like the Coke chocolate mint one, excuse me. I can't read or talk today. They combine energy gel with collagen proteins. They're fast absorbing, so they get in your system quickly. Easy on the stomach. They're really great. Go to builtgo.com. Use the promo code LOCKED, all one word. You'll get 20% off your next order with that promo code LOCKED for 20% off at builtgo.com. Let's go. All right, Adam, we're back. We're questioning it up. We're Pacers talking. And I love vague questions like the next one because it's usually fun and open-ended, but we're trying to go fast today because questions on questions. Jake Exline at J_Exline31. Who is your candidate to have a breakout season? I'll let you go first.
Oh, breakout season, Aaron Holiday.
Yeah, that was my answer too, so I'll pick a different one. Tell me about Aaron Holiday.
Well, I think he has shown flashes, and at some point I think he could, it's kind of a make or break, I guess, for him, right? So to me, he could easily, you know, fail this season, but I think if we're talking about breakout, I don't think anybody's going to like go above what we think, right? I mean, I think there's a chance Domas gets to 20 points a game, but then breaking out, he was already breaking out last year. Same with Warren, May, Brogdon, Adam. You know, you can tell me any of those three guys. So my thing is like Aaron Holiday could go from being, you know, what, he played 20 something minutes a game last year to low 20s to being 28 minutes if he's playing, you know, in possibly in a, you know, a small starting lineup at times, because he could go from, you know, he could be a 40-plus three-point shooter and a normal 50% shooter from the field and score 14 points a game, have, you know, 6 assists. He's that kind of ability, I think, if everything goes right. I mean, I'm probably blowing up too much, but I think he could break it to that point.
Yeah, early last season, McConnell was obviously better than him. So they didn't play him as much, and then injuries got him back in the rotation. I think by the end of the year, even, he closed that gap on McConnell. And if Bjorkren's tendencies to develop and play younger guys more often than McMillan did hold to be true when the season starts, I think we'll just see him play a lot, which will help him be the breakout guy, the guy who shows the most improvement, point guard in year three. There's a lot of anecdotal reasons that he'll be better. And, of course, just skill growth will just happen. If I had to pick someone else who isn't Aaron Holiday, that's a lot harder because a lot of the rest of the lineup is, you know, more established or their skills are more obvious. I guess I'll go with TJ Warren. I think if they're really – we talked about this yesterday. If they're really talking about playing him at the four and getting him in more versatile situations, we saw in the bubble, hey, you give the guys who can do stuff with the ball on the perimeter more often, good things happen. I think they're going to try to lean on that a little more next year, see how much of that bubble magic was really real. But I think Aaron's a better answer. I just wanted to add someone else into the fire.
Yeah, right. For Warren to have a breakout year, he's going to have to, like, basically go from 18 points a game to 25 points a game, right? To really, or maybe not
to quite be that. A real, like, breakout, yeah. Not just
all-star level breakout, right? Because he's at a point where I think he's one of the best 60 players in the league, let's say, right? I don't know. Is that fair to say, you think?
Is there anything Vic could do for you to call it a breakout? Like, would he have to get back to his 2017-18 level?
I mean, yeah. If he shoots, what, he shoots 68% around the rim that year? Right.
Yeah, and he made every pull-up three under the sun for, like, 3 months.
Yeah, if he all of a sudden is doing that again, then I'm like, oh. Oh, Superstar Vic is back. That's a does he win most improved player again? I guess there's no comeback
player. No,
he's probably a comeback player of the year.
Yeah.
But you can't really do that.
I'd be like if Kevin Durant won it with the Thunder, they would not do that. Yes. All right. Next one is not really a Pacers question, and that's admitted in the question, but we'll get to that in a second. Big Black Einstein Smith says, not really related, but kind of, how does disabled player exceptions work? Pacers applied for one when Oladipo got hurt, and I believe they got approved for it. They did. Now the Warriors got one for Clay. How does it work with roster flexibility? Well, the Pacers could need one if someone gets hurt this year for the rest of the season. Basically, it's a percentage of their salary. You get a like an exception that you're allowed to sign a guy into for the rest of that one season. So the guy you get that you sign is either on a one-year deal or you can trade for somebody on a one-year deal. They can't be on a multi-year deal, and that's it. It's basically just like free extra roster spot. But you do have to pay the cash, so the Pacers would not use it because they'd go into the tax if they ever get one and use it.
Yeah, I mean – the thing about all these exceptions or all these like kind of thing you can get, right? Trade exception, I guess, things like that, is that they're more valuable on what's the right way, on like paper than they probably are in reality. If that makes sense. Right. They kind of, I mean, the one for the injury, I guess, kind of works because you have to need a roster spot and you might, but like it costs the team more money now, but they probably have insurance money in the guy's contract or whatnot, but like it's still out of pocket, costs them whatever it costs to get that player replaced. So I mean, it's still money in some ways.
Scott at SAHOIT88 says, doesn't it seem like the Pacers are destined to be middle of the pack? Well, because they didn't get Hayward and they're going with the same rosters last year, kind of feels like they'll be about where they were last year. Probably like in terms of wins, they'll probably be a little lower in the standings. So probably about middle of the pack next year, yes. You don't always go for the top every year. Believe it or not, there are 13 teams between 1 and 15 every year. But yeah, it doesn't feel like they'll be near the top of the East this year, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, just my off the top of my head right now, they're probably the sixth seed in the East. They'll probably finally get to the fifth because they always do.
I have them at seven, but it's the Pacers, and they're always a little bit better than we think. So,
right. So, like the no particular order: Bucks, Nets, Heat,
Celtics, Sixers.
Raptors, Sixers. Yeah, I guess I don't know. I mean, I have a feeling – maybe you're right. I don't know. Philly, I'm still going to like police all the rights.
They could be better than Philly. They could be better than Brooklyn. They could be better than Toronto. And they could be better – they were better than Miami last year in the regular season, right?
Like better than Boston. Boston might have got worse too, depending on what happens too.
Yeah, so. Yeah. They could be better than any of those teams, right? So they'll probably end up 5, 6, 7. We'll see. It does seem like they are destined to be about middle of the pack this year. We'll see what a new coach can do to energize.
Well, middle of the pack of the playoff team. They'll still be in the top third of the Eastern Conference.
Right,
top,
right.
40%.
Andrew at AndrewHarp_ says, give – this isn't even a question. This is a demand, and I love that. Give Sumner the McConnell minutes, please. I agree. I mean, they won't because McConnell was good last year, but I would love that very much.
They might. I mean, the new coach might just
– I will take 4 losses in the first 3 weeks of the season if it means Sumner can develop as the backup guard.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like that is that's a long-term play. McMillan obviously was not willing to make that kind of long-term move. I wonder if Bjorkren is because he has – what did he get? Do you know how many years he got in his contract?
I don't know if that's come out yet.
Right, I don't think the details have come out yet, but
– I wonder if – I've never thought about this until just now, but I wonder how much, too, with McMillan playing McConnell last year was like you know, he admitted to KP before the season, if he can't get out of the first round, he shouldn't have his job. I wonder if he kind of knew his time could be coming to an end and he just leaned in on the win.
He's been playing for his job for like three straight seasons, it feels like.
No, I don't think that's true.
Ever since, I would say,
He went after the Cavs series, he was on cloud nine the entire next season. He couldn't get
fired. I guess I kind of thought because he blew that playoff series, he should be on the hot seat, but maybe not.
No.
He did blow that playoff series, but not playing big the whole second half.
Blowing it, but also getting your team farther than anyone thought is a weird dichotomy of like how much, what do you pin on the guy at that
point? No, but you're right. He's probably the last 2 years has been after the failed year of Vic's injury, which was not really his fault, but like it was kind of like, oh, can't really, he needs a superstar. And then
we saw how much he was carried by one guy's dominance.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess that's fair, but I just think if Brooklyn has 4 or 5 years, is a different timeline, right? He's not necessarily thinking about how do I win every game each year, but he's probably thinking like, how do I develop a roster that's good in 2 or 3 years? And Sumner is the key. Sumner and Aaron Holiday are both the key to that, right? They're the guys who can develop into future starters if they, you know, give them the opportunity. Or Goga's also one, right? That's kind of the three guys they have.
Yeah. Very true. Tony Fry at Mandan86 says, do the Pacers make in-season trade? Vic or Miles? Do they make an in-season trade? I would say yes, Vic or Miles. I don't know. Miles seems still like he'll be on trade rumors for the rest of his time with the Pacers, basically. So good chance with him. Vic, I can't really say because if Vic's awesome, they won't trade him. If Vic's really bad, he won't have any value. So I can't guess with him. With Miles, I can guess he'll probably be in talks. And I think we talked about this yesterday, that I think they'll make a trade just given their financial situation and the logjam of guards they have.
Yeah, so like the thing, I'm going to modify this. Maybe you have a question coming up about this, that question, and I don't know. You don't show me the questions beforehand. I just kind of answer them. But my question would be like, I think Turner's probably is coming in the hot seat for the entire year and could get traded. But like, let's say Vic is like amazing the first 3 months, or maybe not amazing, but like really good. Like clearly a top 30 player. I mean, that's not getting, you know, it's not going too high. And you look like you have a shot, you know, you're hovering in the 3-4 seed. You could be a frisky East team, maybe get a first round win. And do you, unless Vic like outright says, I want out, do you trade in a cash in the value you can get, or do you just ride it out and hope that he resigns? So you have the incumbent advantage of the money.
I think they would ride that out.
Right. Same. So
it's their best shot at a star in their market.
Then how does Vic get traded? Right. Does he have to stink?
I don't think he does.
Right, no, I don't think there's a way Vic really gets traded now. I mean,
yeah,
I think
if it's real that he wants out, which is what was talked about a lot this offseason, then yeah, we've been talking about the deadline being the time. But if his commitment to the team is genuine and him and Bjork are actually tight, it's hard for me to see a way it happens.
Yeah, and my guess, the thing is, like, that maybe the only way I can get traded is if he's amazing and the team is terrible. Then it's of course. But like,
if he's just awful,
how does he get traded? Nobody wants him.
Someone will. If he's not like want him, but like here's Victor Oladipo for some other like Kelly Olynyk and some other shits expiring.
You're right. You're right. If the team is awful and he's awful, but the team's good and he's not great, I'm not sure they're not going to hold out hope being it better, I guess.
Right. All right. But last one, then we'll do one more break. This one is actually easy. I didn't even mean to do this. Francisco Pro at FranPro31. How can the Pacers play Warren Moore at the four who ends up losing minutes? Great question. Listen to Monday's podcast, but the short answer is, either Turner's going to have to play less or Goga's not going to play as much as they say because...
Or McDermott
doesn't play at all, but I highly doubt that because that dude can shoot.
They did try to trade him.
That's true. He's a good player. So
I'm just...
They tried to lump him in to get Gordon Hayward. I don't know if that's a tried to trade him, but I...
Listen to yesterday's podcast. We pretty much threw this whole question.
Mondays, because I'm not listening. But yeah, we discussed because Pritchard said they wanted to play Warren Moore at the four, and he said they want Turner to do all these things, and he said they want Goga to play. We were trying to marry up which one of those things is probably false, and then we kind of landed on Goga being the odd man out there. So if he does get minutes at the four, it'll probably be like 10 to 15 a game. And then Goga just doesn't play. That's how I think Warren plays at the four. All right, one more break, and then we'll get to a couple more questions for the first installment of the Locked On Pacers Training Camp Mailbag. Our first repeat to start off this break, Jimmy at James5538. We have two-parter, but the first part we have had before. One, under previous Nate, Sabonis was an all-star. How will he be utilized under new Nate? I guess that's not really a duplicate. It's a little different. I don't know, but I kind of feel like Sabonis will get the ball a little less under a new regime because I think any other coach outside McMillan will be a little more guard-heavy focused. Although Sabonis can just do so many things that it's certainly possible they continue to lean heavily on him. So I feel like his role will be mostly similar with maybe like 1 or 2% less usage, which is you won't even notice that kind of stuff.
I think there'll be more. What's the right way? Like not like off main action usage, right? Like back screens, maybe in some ways, or using him more as like, right? Because a lot of times, pretty much every action starts with Sabonis in some way. It was ball in his hands or setting a screen or something, right? But maybe what you do is you run action up top and use Sabonis down low to, you know, set a, what's that called exactly? I forget.
Flappy.
But like, yeah, exactly. And to get somebody open that way, or you do some of the, what is Steve Kerr, the double doors? How do they call
elevator.
It? The elevator screens with Sabonis. I mean, that's what I mean. Like
elevator with Sabonis would be awesome. Frank Vogel ran elevator a lot for Paul George. It was one of my favorite plays.
That's, I mean, they could do some of that stuff a little more than just like traditional Sabonis pick and roll. He gets the ball. He finds the pass, whatever. I mean, I think you'll see, and we didn't see a lot of this, but I think you'll, because we didn't have Oladipo back, you'll see more of the dribble handoffs a ton of. They were, him and Sabonis love running those, and it really helps get Oladipo like a clean look inside 10 feet a lot of times. So I think that's where we'll see some difference. But you're right. I don't think it'll be like crazy different, maybe a little less usage. But if he is an improved passer, you might actually give him more, because he's if you give him the ball with four shooters, I mean, it's like game over.
Right. The second part of this question, if Warren becomes the guy, what's a reasonable extension for him? Probably like 4 for $80, which is tough because they can't legally offer that. I think the most they'll be able to legally offer if he becomes the guy next year is 120% of his 13.9. I think it's like four extra. Year, yeah, they can offer like 4 for $60 on top of that 1 year that he already has. Maybe he'll accept that. He'll be old enough that maybe it's worth it for him. But if he's really the guy, he'd probably just wait till free agency.
Right. He's – what is he, 27? Going to be 27 this season, right?
I don't know his exact age. He's
going to be 27 this season.
That's a gap in my Pacers knowledge, just players' ages.
I think he'll be 27 coming into this season, I believe. So he has 2 years left. So he'll be 29 at the end of his deal. If he becomes the guy for 2 seasons at 29 years old, he's going to get like a ridiculous contract as a six ball forward who can shoot threes and, you know, is like an amazing scorer. I mean, you're talking about a guy who, I mean, to me, his comp would be sort of DeRozan-esque, but he's a better defender in some ways. But, like, if that's what he could become, I mean, he's going to get he's not going to take it. He's going to get maxed out at the end of the second year by somebody or close to it. You know what I mean? By some team. I mean, it may not be the Pacers, but it'll be somebody's going to give him whatever that point is, probably going to be $35 million a year over 5 years.
Yeah, it's going to be they probably can't extend him, but that my reasonable extension in a vacuum would be like 4 years, $80 million or something.
Yeah, but I guess – he's going to have to do multiple, but if he has multiple years of plus 20 plus points per game, which is what I consider kind of being the guy, right? If he's putting up 23 a game or 2 years, he's not going to take an extension because he's going to take it for so much more money.
Zach Pearson at ZA Pearson NBA. Although nobody knows for sure how Bjorken will handle his rotations, who would you bet is the Pacers' sixth man this season? To start the season, I think it'll be Justin Holiday just because he's the most versatile bench guy they have. I don't know if he'll copy McMillan, but I'd imagine they want to do the Sabonis with the bench groups again just because of how successful that was last year, right? So if Sabonis is truly subbing out first, then you have to bring in a forward. Justin Holiday seems like the best guy there. If his shot falls off or he's a little worse than last year, maybe they pivot and it becomes, you know, a guard or something. I don't know, but I think it's going to be Justin Holiday at least at first.
Sure. Yeah, Holiday first, maybe Lamb by the end of the year.
Yes, that is exactly the two guys I think have a chance.
Aaron Holiday, maybe an outside chance.
If it's someone too small, you're kind of stuck throwing them into the wolves with the two centers. But if the two centers is working, I guess that's fine.
Yeah, but also I think Aaron Holiday would even kind of work even if you went to one center. I mean, you could make it. You could because Barden can play three on defense. You're kind of okay.
That's true. Next question is kind of boring because my answers are going to be lame. Nick Werner at Nick Werner says, what will Cassius Stanley's role be in the rotation, in parentheses, if any, be this year? None.
He just garbage time, maybe. Maybe garbage time, but probably not even that.
So, here's what I'll say. Like last year, we saw this with Bowen one time. This is what we talked about yesterday when they signed all these guys. The two-way guys will probably have like one game a year where they're actually needed, right? We can date this back forever. Poythress was on a two-way. He was the first ever – Alex Poythress was the first ever Pacers guy to get a two-way. And then he ended up playing like one or two important games and then got called up to the full roster. And then there was Sumner was hurt. And then Ben Moore got called up for one game. And then he made the roster. And then the next year it was Sumner again. And I can't remember the second one, unfortunately. Oh, Trey McKinney-Jones and stuff like that. Like all these guys get like break glass in case of emergency playing time. That's what their role is. And then last year it was Bowen who started that one game against the Bulls and Naz who played that one game against the Nets. And most of the time outside of those two games – is what you just said. They just play garbage time. So Cassius's role in the rotation will be none. He'll probably play 2 or 3 minutes at the end of some blowouts, and then there'll be one game where Warren is hurt and McDermott's hurt and Justin is starting, and you know, maybe some other person is hurt, and they're like, okay, Cassius is in the rotation and he's playing 12 minutes tonight. But that's probably it.
They've had like 3 years in a row where there's been a game at the end of the year where they don't try.
That'll be a game where Sumner hit
the game winner. Was that 2 years ago now?
They hit the free throws. Yeah, that was 2 years ago.
Yeah, and then last year was the end of the season in the bubble. They didn't actually need that win.
No, the Leafs played like 30 minutes against the Heat.
Yeah, so there'll be a game where he might get a lot of time because of that too. They'll be locked in at the whatever seed with a game left, and they don't want to play anybody before the thing starts. So that could happen for sure.
So here's the inverse of a question we answered about TJ Warren earlier, where we talked about McDermott potentially being the guy out of the rotation. Do you see Doug getting more minutes under Bjorken than he did under McMillan? I don't think he'll get more, but I bet he stays about the same just because his shooting is just so useful that you can stick him in a lot of lineups and he's still helpful. And you don't have those games like he did against the Nuggets where he's like the best scorer on the court. So I think he'll play about the same as last year.
Right. He was at about 20, right? Roughly.
Yeah. Yep.
19.9, I think, was what his actual ended up being per minutes per game.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Unless he hits some kind of streak where he's, you know, can close out games because he's so good in the fourth quarter, that's about the only way he maybe ups his minutes, right? If he has, you know, a nice, let's say, 10-game stretch where he's playing the last 12 minutes and most of he'll be playing, let's say, 25 a game instead of 20. But I probably think 20 is probably the right number for him. He's just not like in the athletic shape some of the other guys are in. And so he needs sort of to like come off with a high energy and then, you know, needs a rest and so on. So I think 20 is about right for him.
I agree with you there. I think that makes a lot of sense. So I think he'll get about the same minutes, but be probably a little bit better utilized where he'd be cutting a lot more, moving a lot more, be a threat away from the play. I'm excited for that. Sam Sinclair II at Sam Sinclair 96. How do you see the Pacers handling the backup shooting guard minutes early on in the season before Jeremy Lamb comes back into the regular rotation? Aaron Holiday, come on down, baby. I think it's going to be just like last year where it's the Aaron McConnell backcourt is the bench group, unless you see something different, but that's what I think is going to happen.
I mean, I think there's not such as McConnell. It isn't necessarily the other guy in there.
And Sumner is?
I doubt it. Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe they put Sumner. I doubt it. But
So it's possible that it's just Aaron, Justin, Doug, and Goga as their four bench guys. But then they're doing Goga.
I don't know how that works. Yeah, how do they play the centers right? That's the problem.
I know. It's hard to figure. That's why I feel like
you're going
to
be Goga playing a two. You're going to play an entire two center lineup the entire game. I mean,
wouldn't do that. I'm just
that's
saying.
Like 1980 again.
Yeah, that's why I think one of McConnell or Sumner will be in there. I guess Jakar is an option as well. Jakar doesn't figure to me to be a rotation guy unless one of the starting centers is hurt.
Yeah, I guess my thing is like McConnell was so bad in the playoffs last year, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know if McDermott just has some chemistry that's going to keep him alive, but like, there is a chance Sumner could come in just better than him if he can stay healthy. I mean, Sumner was pretty good to start the year last year, and then he got hurt, kind of jumped out. But if he, you know, has been working on his game the past 3 months, like we thought he might be doing, he could pass McConnell theoretically.
Part of what Bjorken said, the reasoning was that he likes to play the varied lineups and mix and match his groups. Is that so? Come playoff time, there's no surprises if they need to mix things up. And if McConnell's truly sticky again, and they have been experimenting with Holiday, Sumner all season long, boom, they're ready for that. So maybe that's an option too. I don't know. But my guess is they'll start with McConnell and Holiday, but I would not be surprised to see Sumner get McConnell's spot.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to – I mean, obviously, if they get rid of the – well, because then we also forgot about Lamb, right, at some point too. I mean, that's also the problem.
Yeah,
that's like true. They could just make Aaron Holiday the point guard and make Lamb at some point, make it just Lamb, Holiday brothers – McDermott and Goga, or not Goga, or like Sabonis. So yep. I don't know. I mean, I think there's a chance McConnell ends up on the outside of this whole thing.
That is true. That is possible. I don't really know what to think. Last question for this episode comes from Colonel Asada, which is a funny name. Blue Oyster Cult is his at. He says, why am I so sad about Alize Johnson leaving? Well, first of all, Alize Johnson was the only guy from last year's roster who on his own departed, chose another team. Now, the Pacers could not have offered him anything, and then he didn't really choose. But anyway, that's part of it. It's the only member of last year's fun team that's not beat. But also, it's because that dude was a stud rebounder who played hard as hell every minute he was on the court and just never really got an opportunity. And it always sucks when those guys who show they have an elite skill, even if they stink at everything else, don't get really the chance to prove it in meaningful minutes.
Yeah, and he was, what, like an unknown college player. He went to some smaller college, was going to be a point guard, then grew 10 inches and became a power forward-ish. And he also had that really good video where he bought his mom a house, and that was kind of cool.
That was awesome.
I mean, he just seemed like kind of a cool dude, a nice guy, and it sucks to see guys like that who leave. Not, you know, yep. going to better pastures, I guess, to get more opportunities. But it just sucks, you know, when he's a guy who seems like he's just nice and humble and whatever, you know, worked hard to get to where he is. You just feel bad for those kind of guys.
I agree. We'll see. I hope he lands well with the Raptors and makes their final roster. We'll see. If Woj is tweeting out that signing, that probably bodes well for him. But we'll see. All right, that was 16 questions. We flew through that, and we have 15 more to get to tomorrow. So thank you guys so much for submitting questions. And if you did submit one, before I deleted the tweets because we got so many, if you did submit one and you know you replied, don't worry. It will be there tomorrow. Thank you guys for tuning in. You can follow the show on Twitter @LockedOnPacers, Adam @Freeman5, and me @DeastNBA. Have a great day, and we will see you tomorrow.